Logic Inc.'s internal totality, and we have two speakers. We will have a break in between. Our first speaker is Professor Angelica Nuzzo. She is from the City University of New York, Department of Philosophy. She is the author of many articles and the book called Kant and the Unity of Reason, Purdue University Press. And the title of her paper is Truth and Refutation in Hegel's Begriff's Logic. İlk konuğumuz bugün Angelica Nuzzo, Profesör Angelica Nuzzo. Kendisi New York Şehir Üniversitesi'nde profesör. Birçok makalenin yanı sıra Kant ve Aklın Birliği ya da Unity of Reason kitabının da yazarı. Kendisinin konuşmasının başlığı Hegel'in kavram mantığında gerçeklik ve çürütme.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. In defining transcendental logic in relation to traditional logic, Kant discusses Pilato's question, what is truth? Unlike general logic, concerned only with the formal truth of thinking in abstraction from all content, transcendental logic is concerned with the truth of thinking in relation to a determinate content. Pilato's question is reproposed by Hegel in the introduction to the logic of the concept. In the general introduction to the logic, Hegel embraces Kant's claim that task of this discipline is not the exposition of abstract forms of thinking, but the introduction of content in the logical form. Thereby, Hegel's dialectical speculative logic is placed in the aftermath of Kant's transcendental logic. It is its true Aufhebung. Opening the logic of the concept, however, Hegel makes the programmatic claim more specific. The aim is, I quote, to set the logical form in motion and to show its internal movement or the process through which logical form, in acquiring adequate reality, becomes a logical form of truth. If Hegel's logic of the concept inherits its determinations from general logic, its peculiar character consists in setting the dead bones, as he says, of logic into living motion, showing their inner life and their specific cognitive validity. Speculative conceptual truth is defined by this new framework. It is content-based, concrete truth, and is dynamically referred to the living historical process in and by which it is produced. In raising the problem of truth in the Begriff's Logik, Hegel refers to Spinoza. The concept as paradigm of speculative truth and freedom results from the Widerlegung of Spinozism. In refuting Spinozism, the concept overcomes the logic of substance and its necessity and leads on to subjectivity and freedom. The aim of this paper is to clarify the meaning of the process of Widerlegung for the attainment of speculative truth in the Begriff. What is logical refutation, and how does it establish the truth of what follows, or what follows as the truth of what precedes, by refuting it? What is a peculiar character of the truth thereby instituted? I address the issue of refutation in the Begriff's Logik in an indirect way. First, I discuss the passage of the Phenomenology in which Hegel rejects a view that opposes truth to the false by holding fast to their fixed opposition. Here I highlight one explicit source of Hegel's view of truth. This discussion sets a context for the problem of truth addressed in the Begriffslogik, topic of the second part of the paper. So I come to the first part, false conceptions of truth. At the heart of Lessing's 1779 Nathan der Weise is Pilato's question, what is truth? At stake is the issue of what is a true way to inquire about truth. It emerges as an unexpected turn in Nathan's encounter with Saladin. Nathan expects money to be the issue, but he receives a different request. Saladin asks him bluntly, which of the three religions, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, is the true one? For of these religions, only one can be the true one. This was Lessing. The question perplexes Nathan, and not only because of what it asks, but first and foremost for how it asks. In the monologue that follows, Nathan raises the problem of truth. And here I'm not going to read the passage that you should have as a handout, the first passage. Nathan rejects the numismatic conception of truth, truth as coin. To treat truth as coin and to ask for truth is to ask the wrong question concerning truth. It is even to deceive, to set up a trap to wisdom in the name of truth. To the extent that a coin is both a proposition bearing an inscription, the coin is a sort of numismatic epigram, this is Lessing's own definition, and a material thing, it may seem apt to illustrate the correspondence theory of truth as relationship between proposition and thing. Old coins carried their value in the objective materiality of their weight and in the purity of their metal. Here proposition and thing correspond. New coins, instead, are abstract exchange devices whose value is independent of the materiality of the coin thing and is created by the inscription of the issuing authority. In this case, no reference to the materiality of the coin is made. Value is created by the arbitrary and abstract act of the minting authority. In Lessing's view, while the coin as such is altogether a false token of truth as correspondence, new coins falsify such conception even more radically than old ones. Nathan's proof that truth cannot be considered coin, hence that the Sultan's question is a wrong question about truth, a false, a morally flawed, and a politically dangerous question, is contained in the famous parable of the three rings. Common to Saladin's inquiry regarding the true religion on the assumption that only one can be the true religion, and to the issue raised by the parable regarding the authenticity of the three rings on the assumption that only one can be the authentic ring, is the fact that the question cannot be answered when truth is treated as a coin. Since in both cases, truth cannot be theoretically and objectively distinguished from falsity, the impossibility of the answer betrays the inconsistency of the question. Nathan's choice of replying to Saladin not directly with a positive claim formulated in the terms dictated by his question, but indirectly by way of an enigmatic parable, already entails his rejection of the truth-money equivalence and the proposal of a different, non-economic and static, but moral and developmental idea of truth. Nathan refuses to deliver truth as a ready-made coin that could be cashed out and exchanged in a monetary transaction. He offers his argument in the form of a complex story whose hidden meaning comes to light only progressively, as a result of a historical and experiential development. What does Lessing's rejection of the numismatics of truth imply with regard to the nature of truth? First, as far as its origin is concerned, truth does not depend on the arbitrary power of the issuing authority. From this it follows that truth has no right to exercise the kind of tyranny, as Lessing says, that one dominating currency or religion pretends over the others. Moreover, truth does not come already made and ready for exchange as coins do. Truth is constituted through a process of development in which only that which, or the one who, succeeds in proving itself true through action, can claim to be true. Second, with regard to its acquisition, truth is not as easily accessible as a new coin is from an immediate look at its inscription, but also not as the old coin is by its being weighted up in relation to an established touchstone. In addition, truth cannot be possessed or accumulated as money. Truth does not fill the mind as coins fill a sack of gold. Third, with regard to its ontological status, truth is neither a thing which can be possessed, exchanged, and alienated at will, nor a property of things. Truth is a quality of actions belonging to specific acting subjects and characterizing historical processes. Thus, assuming that truth is indeed unique, its uniqueness is not exclusive, but fundamentally inclusive and constitutively pluralistic. It's not tyrannical in its repression of difference, but tolerance of difference. Ultimately, for Lessing, truth is not coin, but he says, is freie Liebe, love free of prejudice, virtuous action that follows from a love free of prejudice that is ultimately from Vernunft. Truth is freedom. It is action guided by reason as unification of Begriff and Tat. The uniqueness of truth consists of its essential plurality and universality. Faith is plural in the three religions. Paternal love and active morality is plural in the Streben that animates the son's deeds. Finally, truth is not formal and abstract, as coins are, being universal means of exchange. Truth has the universality and is the universality of a validated history. It is immediately one with its conceptual content. In the second part of this paper, I suggest that Nathan's rings parable, moving from the numismatic of truth to the idea of truth as freie Liebe, enforced and realized by reason, contains a conceptual shift analogous to the one that guides Hegel in the transition from the logic of the essence to the logic of the concept, from the order of necessity to the realm of freedom, and indeed, the freie Liebe that Hegel says characterizes the Begriff as speculative truth. But let us turn now first to a famous passage of the Phenomenology. In the preface to the Phenomenology, Hegel confronts the views that proposing truth or the absolute as inception of philosophy see any negative preparation to science as useless, if not utterly wrong. Such is a position brought forth by Schelling's pistol shot, namely by the immediacy of an intellectual intuition for which all development out of the absolute is sacrificed to the effortless possession of truth. But it is also the position of the logic of the understanding that claims an unchangeable truth maintained pure falsity because set apart from it. At stake for Hegel is the proposal of a form of thinking that is fundamentally discursive and dynamic. Hegel formulates a task as that of, I quote, bringing fluidity to fixed thoughts, or alternative as that of, again a quote, realizing and spiritualizing the universal by overcoming fixed thoughts. Significantly, these programmatic points are identical with the movement that transforms pure thoughts into logical concepts. But how can thought be rendered fluid, the universal realized and the concept attained? Hegel claims that thinking is set in movement when, I quote, the pure consciousness of itself makes abstraction from itself. Namely, when pure thinking yields to the power of the negative, and instead of persisting in the central position that Kant more recently conferred to it, consents to becoming a moment of a more comprehensive process. Once this change of perspective has taken effect, it becomes clear that truth belongs to the larger overall process, the famous whole, that each partial moment owes its truth to the whole of which it is part, and that each partial moment taken in its isolation is simply false. For the pure consciousness of itself to make abstraction for itself means that it must abandon the fixity of its self-conferred autarkic position. To negate the fixation in which thinking stakes its own unmoved centrality and ultimately its pretended truth implies a twofold move. First, thinking must abandon its fixation in relation to a manifold content which it distinguishes from itself. Second, it must abandon the fixity of the very act of distinguishing such a content from itself, the act that sanctions the alleged unmoved Unbedingtheit of the I to which such content is then referred. If the phenomenology aims at instituting truth as a subject beyond mere Spinozistic substantiality, the subjectivity Hegel is after is not the unmoved Copernican I think of transcendental philosophy. Kant's subject still belongs to the autarkic order of Nathan's true coin. The standpoint of science results from a development in which consciousness achieves truth only by mediating its initial immediacy, thereby activating the negative power of the self and losing its fixity and guaranteed uniqueness. To recognize that knowledge in its immediate position is not yet true means that a fundamental Ungleichheit or Unterschied still separates consciousness from its content. Now, it is precisely this lack of identity between consciousness and object, this lack of truth, as it were, that determines the fluid, process-like character of thinking on its path to science. Such difference is the negative, as the motor of the phenomenological process. In this way, Hegel draws to the center what traditional logic has always labored to keep out, for the negative is by definition a lack, is a falsity that general logic, being necessarily concerned with truth and only with truth, must block out of thinking. On Hegel's view, by contrast, the negative is the soul and the moving principle of the process towards truth, which is the very process of truth. To claim that a difference separates consciousness from its object is to claim that an Ungleichheit affects substance in relation to itself. To eliminate such difference is required recognition that what appears as an external action, that substance only suffers, is truly its own action. Only at this point substance is proved subject, namely when suffered external action is turned into one's free self-determination. It is this same turn that Lessing accomplishes in the Three Rings parable. The turn from the object-centered fixed conception of truth, the numismatics of truth, which one may happen to inherit or possess as a given thing coin, to a developmental notion of truth enforced by the subject's free activity and result of a historical process of self-determination. While the logic is a science of truth in the figure of truth, the phenomenology is a process in which truth appears in the complete series of its partial forms. Hence, truth is herein present along with its negative form, and is itself rather the totality of the false. For this reason, Hegel needs to debunk the common sense representations of falsity, which are the major obstacle to gaining access to truth. Common to these views is the assumption that truth and falsity are fixed, thoroughly separated, and unmoved determinations of things or thoughts. Under this condition, however, the question arises, why do we need a science of the false or phenomenology? Can't we start immediately with truth? The situation is similar to the one staged by Nathan's reaction to Saladin's question regarding the only true religion. Saladin pretends the answer to his query, the delivery of truth, to happen in the way of Schelling's pistol shot. Truth must be paid on the spot, so bas, so blanc. The understanding assumption is the same. Truth is separate from the false and immediately graspable as such. No need to labor on finding it. No need to dwell on falsity. But just as Pilato's question is unanswerable in the framework of a numismatic theory of truth, so in the framework of the logic of the understanding, the access to speculative truth is inexorably blocked. It follows that such position must be refuted if the phenomenology is to lead on to speculative logic as science of truth in the figure of truth. It is no surprise, then, that in his argument, Hegel appeals to Lessing's refutation of the numismatic of truth. And this is your second passage that I'm not going to read here, the passage where Hegel directly quotes Lessing. Hegel rejects a common notion that truth and falsity are determinate thoughts given once and for all. Such notion leads to the essentialist view that sets them as independent essences separated from each other, and consequently denies any gemeinschaft between them. Moreover, he rejects the representation of truth and falsity as fixed, isolated thoughts or essences, as well as the view that deprives them of dynamic development and possibility of change. While Hegel's famous conception of truth as a whole or a system offers the programmatic backdrop for his argument, at this juncture he endorses Lessing's position to state his disagreement with the numismatics of truth. Hegel simply claims, it must be contended that truth is not minted coin. The understanding's conception of truth is a numismatics of truth. Its fixation in the thing coin, its unmoved essentialization of value, which is consigned to the illusory process of abstract exchange, its appeal to the minting authority for ultimate validity, its radical separation of truth and falsity, these are the target for both Hegel and Lessing. And since Lessing has magisterially provided the refutation of such position, nothing more needs to be added. In the Phenomenology, Lessing's refutation of the numismatics of truth becomes a starting point of Hegel's speculative developmental idea of truth. And now to the second part of the paper, Truth and Falsity in the Begriffslogik. In the introductory pages of The Logic of the Concept, Pilato's question is raised again. In the transition from Wesen to Begriff, from the necessity of substance to the freedom of the concept, we can recognize the gesture that leads from Saladin's economic determinism of the truth coin, to Nathan's dynamic and historical idea of truth as freedom. The subjective logic, second main division of the science of logic, is framed from the beginning to the end by the issues discussed so far. Literally repeating the programmatic claim of the preface to the Phenomenology, Hegel announces the task of the Begriffslogik as that of, this is a quote, bringing fluidity to the ossified material of traditional logic and of reigniting the living concept in that dead material. Pilato's question is raised in this connection. Even though it seems inherited from formal logic, conceptual truth is not a given but is established through and as a process. The articulation of this process is the task of the Begriffslogik. Looking at this development in terms of the methodological moments of beginning, advancement, and end from the Absolute Idea chapter, we can establish the following points. First, the movement that first brings a concept to the fore starts with the end of the logic of essence, or with a movement that leads the logic of essence to its end and to the transition to a new sphere. This is the first, Hegel says, deduction or genetic definition of the concept. Significantly, while the term deduction suggests a Kantian reference, Hegel further develops this deduction in terms of a refutation of Spinozism. To claim that the concept is the truth of substance is to refute Spinoza's metaphysics of substance, or alternatively, the view of substance proper to the logic of essence. The question here is, how does a speculative concept negotiate truth and falsity in the procedure of refutation? By first instituting the sphere of the concept as a realm of freedom, the movement of refutation offers Hegel's speculative alternative to the Verstandeslogik view of truth. Second, the logic of the concept advances by presenting the concept as a concrete universal. Moreover, Hegel qualifies the Begriff as Macht, but as a power of particular kind, namely as freie Macht, which is freie Liebe. Here, the conclusion of Nathan's parable is translated in speculative terms, while the refuted Spinoza eventually find its truest meaning. Finally, at the end of the process in which the concept is realized to idea, Hegel presents the absolute idea not only as sich wissende Wahrheit, but also as alle Wahrheit. Concluding the logical process, the absolute idea establishes truth as the most comprehensive systematic totality attainable by the logic. Logical truth is all truth. The absolute idea is das ursprüngliche Wort. What makes the absolute idea truthful as verum verbum is its being the final result of the entire logical process. That which makes the word original, according to the programmatic claim of the phenomenology, is precisely that which sets it as a final result. The originality of truth is not its immediate availability. Schelling's pistol shot or an intellectual intuition, for example, but its position as final result. Its productivity does not lie in its alleged originality, but arises from its having been produced as a culmination of the entire logical development. Now, in the analysis that follows, I shall limit myself to a discussion of the first point. So, refutation. Hegel presents the structure of begriff as a double result. On the one hand, it is a result of the entire development of the objective logic. In this respect, the sphere of being and essence contain the genetische Exposition des Begriffs. On the other hand, the concept results from the very last logical development, namely the movement of substance. Significantly, Hegel translates this latter relation in terms of truth. The Begriff is die Wahrheit der Substanz, and since the chief modality of substance is necessity, he concludes that Freiheit ist die Wahrheit der Notwendigkeit und die Verhältnisweise des Begriffs. Hegel frames the problem of conceptual truth in terms of the process that produces a logical successor. Truth is truth of. It is that which succeeds or follows an accomplished and concluded movement. That which is succeeded or overcome in turn, viewed from the newly gained height and only then, may be seen as false. The false emerges only once truth is established. Truth completes the false. Accordingly, the concept is Vollendung der Substanz, and as such, it is ein höheres, namely subject. The speculative form of truth, expressed in the syntactic form of truth of, is a structure according to which an advancement is made and an ascending oriented movement with a higher and a lower level is established. Moreover, since that which is overcome in the structure of truth specifies or determines this very truth as a truth of, that which precedes and is overcome is still present within truth. Clearly, this structure fundamentally alters the linear and static opposition of truth and falsity defended by the logic of the understanding. Speculative truth does not leave anything behind. It is cumulative and inclusive. It is concrete in that it uses the false as a means to acquire determinateness and specification. While the structure of truth just describes brings to mind the general mode of dialectical Aufhebung at work throughout the logic, in order to introduce the concept, Hegel appeals to a different idea, namely the notion of Widerlegung. If the concept is the truth of substance, the philosophical system that paradigmatically remains stuck, this is Hegel, in the standpoint of substance is Spinoza's. Significantly, Spinoza is called in now not because he generically represents the standpoint of substance, a point Hegel makes in the exposition of substance as the absolute in the logic of essence, but because he has stopped there and hence has not completed the thought of substance into its truth, namely the concept. The falsity or shortcoming, the mangel, that is involved in Spinoza's position consists in taking substance as a static, final, and highest truth that does not itself need to be completed in a higher truth. In so doing, Spinoza is unable to discover the speculative truth of substance, namely its successor, the concept. Thus, what Hegel needs to perform at the beginning of the logic of the concept is a step that leads on to the higher truth of substance. Now, this step takes the form of a vita legum de Spinozismus. At stake in such refutation, Hegel warns, is not the opposition between a true and a false philosophical system, with the aim, indeed a tyrannical aim, as Nathan reminds us, of declaring which one possesses final truth. For the position of substance belongs, after all, to speculative logic itself as necessary moment, and is essentially essential to the concept because it constitutes its very genesis. Substance belongs to the concept if the concept is to be declared the truth of substance and its follendum. Reciprocally, truth arises out of the position of substance and belongs to it. It is a truth of its very standpoint. Hegel indicates two conditions for a refutation leading to speculative truth, or what he says is a true refutation, to take place. First, no Entgegensetzung shall be tolerated, for opposition blocks the access to truth, but making the movement of truth impossible, and rather describes the stalemate resulting from the understanding separation of truth and falsity. Refutation implies instead inclusion and inclusive confrontation of different positions. Second, refutation should not, Hegel says, come from the outside, namely from premises that lie outside of the system to be refuted, but shall be the imminent internal process of thinking through the premises of the system itself. Under these two conditions, Hegel rejects the opposition to Spinoza's philosophy on the basis, for example, that he does not take the claims of freedom and self-conscious subjectivity into account. For such pretended refutation comes from the outside, from a different and higher, already higher standpoint, and does not really engage the position it criticizes. Taking already for granted the self-proclaimed truth of its own standpoint, namely subjectivity, this position, this false refutation, does not recognize the merits of Spinoza's own idea of thinking and its connection with the notion of self-consciousness. Against the merely äußerliches Widerlegen that only yields unilateral results but no higher truth, the wahrhafte Widerlegung, this is a quote, must give in to the force of the adversary and place itself in the circle of his power. The point of the imminent and true refutation of Spinozism is to show the necessary transition from Spinoza's idea of thinking as attribute of substance to the higher, inclusive truth displayed by the subjectivity of the concept. The concept results precisely from the process of thinking through substance, of completing it, as it were. It follows that the only possible refutation, this is a quote, the only possible refutation of Spinozism can consist solely in this, that first, its standpoint is recognized as essential and necessary, and second, this standpoint is lifted to the higher one from itself. There is indeed an ethics of refutation sketched out in this argument. Freedom arises only on the condition of recognizing the adversary as necessary part of one's own truth, or on the condition of building truth as inclusive and respectful of difference. Hegel's conclusion is that the exposition of substance in its leading on to the concept is the true refutation of Spinozism. Thereby, wahrhafte Widerlegung indicates both the properly speculative way of conducting a refutation and the refutation that yields a higher inclusive truth against the blocked unilateral oppositions of the understanding. Thus, to conclude, Widerlegung is an imminent movement by which truth is established as an inclusive pluralistic position at once result and beginning of a new process. For conceptual truth, not being given as closed and final, has to prove itself to be true. Refutation leads to truth as an act of freedom. Here lies the basis of the development of the entire Begriff's Logik. My suggestion is clear at this point. Just as Nathan refutes Saladin's numismatic, substantialist, and deterministic view of truth to establish the idea of truth as empowering freedom of the subject, so Hegel refutes Spinoza's view of substance as final truth in order to move on to the higher truth, freedom, and subjectivity of the concept. Ultimately, however, given the inclusive significance of speculative Widerlegung, Spinoza's truth lives on in Hegel's Begriff. In the end, the Jew Nathan and Lessing with him is indeed close to the other refuted Jew, Spinoza. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor Nuzzolo. That was a quite interesting paper, given that, as far as I understood, she traced Nathan's parable through the development of Hegel's logic, and we see the parallels in the nature of truth, the way it is put forward in Nathan's parable and the way Hegel developed it in the science of logic, that truth is somewhat plural and unique, inclusive, tolerant of differences, and refutation in this connection must itself be imminent, must have an imminent moment, so it must include the other and the other positions, not to exclude them. And we see that development in the logic of concept, and the way she also mentioned about the way Spinoza's concept of substance, the way in which it is completed by Hegel's notion of concept and the real or the highest truth of thinking as concept. Let me just summarize it in Turkish for a Turkish audience. And what I suggest is, I mean, if it's okay, just to take questions to Professor Nuzun now, so that we will give a break, so it may not take too long to raise these questions. So, Profesör Nuzzo oldukça ayrıntılı ve karşılıklı okuma, yani hem Hegel'in görüngü bilimine hem de mantığına ve aynı zamanda Lessing'e referansla çok ilginç bir yapıda bir konuşma sundu bize. Lessing'e referansla oradaki öyküde doğrunun, doğruluğun ya da gerçekliğin ya da hakikatin doğasına ilişkin bir anlatım var. Orada çıkan özellikler içerisinde doğruluğun aslında keyfi bir güce dayalı olmadığını, doğruluğun belli bir şey ya da belli bir şeyin niteliği olmadığını, dolayısıyla paraya benzetilemeyeceğini, doğruluğun her zaman için biricik, çoğul ve kapsayıcı ya da dahil edici olduğunu, dışlayıcı olmadığını söyledi. Ve bu öyküdeki doğruluğun ya da gerçekliğin, hakikatin doğasına ilişkin bu belirlenimleri aslında Hegel'in kavram mantığında da izleyebileceğimizi, aynı izi görebileceğimizden bahsetti. Burada en önemli nokta sanıyorum hakikatin ya da doğruluğun ya da gerçekliğin nasıl tercüme edersek mantık biliminde ve kavram bölümünde özellikle üretkenliğini üretilmiş olmasında aramamız gerektiğini Nuzzo söyledi. Bunun ise bir süreç gerektirdiğini ve sürecinde kendini üretip üretkenliğini de bu kendisinin üretilmiş, kendisini üretiyor olmasına bağlı olduğunu söyledi. Sanıyorum bu doğruluk açısından anlaşılması gereken önemli bir noktaydı. Bu noktada doğru ve yanlış arasındaki kati ayrımların aslında özcü görüşlere ait olduğunu, bunların birbirinden ayrı olarak görülemeyecek, yani birbirinden ayrılmış özler olarak görülemeyeceğini Hegel açısından bahsetti. Dolayısıyla doğru ve yanlış arasında daha dinamik bir ilişki olduğunu vurgulamış oldu. Ara vereceğiz ama ara vermeden önce hem sıcağı sıcağına soru sormak isteyenler varsa, Türkçe sorularınız varsa çevirmeye çalışacağım. Buyurun. İngilizce sorabilirsiniz, çok memnun oluruz. Biraz yüksek sesle duymakta zorluk.
I can't hear anything. I can't hear. Sorry.
No, it's okay. As far as I can read here,
Lessing is an author from the 19th century?
From the 18th century. No, the text is published in 1779. The text is a play, and the central part of the play has this parable of the three rings. I couldn't, for time reason, summarize this parable. And the parable regards this father who loves three sons all equally. And the tradition is that when he dies, he has to live as inheritance this precious ring to the most beloved son. And he can't choose which one because he loves all three of them equally. So he has a jeweler, an artisan, a very good one, who has the task of crafting two other rings exactly identical to the original one. So that is the story. I mean, there is, how can you, doesn't want the copied, okay, the false rings to be really distinguishable from the true one. Okay, so and the result, so this is the shift of the idea of truth. It is not, truth does not lie in the object. Okay, all three rings, like all three religions, are all three true in a sense. It is up to each of the sons to prove themselves up to possession of the ring. So the burden of proof is sort of shifted to the sons. With their acts, with their life, they have to prove to be worthy of inheriting that ring. Okay, so this is sort of the parable of the three rings at the heart. And I understand that not necessarily everybody knows this text. I mean, and I'm just reconstructing this little quote that referenced that Hegel has in that passage of the Preface to the Phenomenology. Yeah. The what? Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I mean, that is really an example of how literature and philosophy, especially in this period, really go together. I mean, there is this, somehow Lessing is a very philosophical, literary person, and this, and actually, I mean, the work that I've done in this paper is only a part of a bigger, the reference immediately after the Lessing passage, the Lessing little quote in the Preface to the Phenomenology, Hegel is quoting Goethe's Faust. And there is another issue about truth being the coin. I mean, it's a big theme throughout the whole Faust. So there is an interesting dialogue between philosophy and literature at very different levels. I mean, it starts from actually being Luther saying that the word is the coin is the word of the Teufel, of the devil, and that is the whole. So coin is a symbol of the false truth of the devil, and Hegel is playing with that reference too in this conception of truth here. Yeah. And what is at stake here is finding the sort of the speculative significance of that literary reference. Yeah.
Okay. Let's take other questions. There's a microphone, Professor Giovanni. You can use the microphone.
I think I can be loud.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's loud.
Yeah. Okay.
Can one take as an inference from what you have said that so far is saying?
George, it's good to use my microphone.
Well, people in the back don't know. Well, thank you. I mean, that's an inference from what I would agree with that. I mean, ultimately, yes, and that maybe also explains that model of that concept of vita legung that has a sort of dialogical meaning there. And yes, I would say so. I would say that then probably looking in the philosophy of right, one could find an analogous transition. I would think that something in the sense of that kind of subjectivity is an intersubjective subjectivity. Yes.
Bir Türkçe'ye çevireceğim çok kısa ilk soruyu da. İlk soru edebiyat ve felsefe. I'm just translating.
Yeah.
İlk soru edebiyat ve felsefe ilişkisi üzerineydi. Lessing'in oyununa referansla. Ve Nuzo'da açıkça evet ikisi arasındaki paralellik özellikle o dönemde çok kuvvetli olduğundan bahsetti. İkinci sorumuz hakikatin aslında bir tür comment'ti de aynı zamanda bir yorumdu da. Hakikatin ancak tinin ya da toplumsal varoluşumuzun eserlerinde bir mesele olarak ortaya konulup erişilip erişilemeyeceği sorusuydu. Nuzo bu konuda da olumlu bir görüş bildirdi ve özellikle de çürütme ya da işte reputation'ın diyalojik bir anlamı olduğu, diyalog barındırması gerektiğini, çürütmenin karşımıza almaktan ziyade bir diyalog süreci gerektirdiğinden bahsetti. Diğer soruları alabiliriz. Sanıyorum bir 5 dakikamız, 2-3 dakikamız daha var. Mikrofon alabilirsen, mikrofon. Herkes dur.
I couldn't understand exactly what you said. Do you think that we produce truth or we know truth outside of us? For him.
That we what? We know the truth or we what?
Do you think that for him we produce the truth for
right.
Or we know truth outside of us?
Well, certainly, yeah. Well, we don't know.
Another question is,
okay.
Can Hegel's attitude to Spinozism be applied to Hegel's philosophy?
Can
Repetition
you?
Of Spinozism?
If Spinozism.
And of Spinozism into a higher place, like a higher system. Can Hegel's repetition of Spinozism for critics of Spinozism be applied to Hegel's philosophy?
So that would be a refutation of Hegel's philosophy.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, to the first question, we don't know the truth. I mean, the whole issue there is truth is not something already made from which, and that's the whole idea of the phenomenology, it's not a starting point that we need to sort of from which we depart, and the issue there is knowing the truth as an object. Truth is exactly that process. Now, in the phenomenology, it's that sort of experiential process, okay, in which truth is constituted through the succession of the errors of consciousness. Now, what happens in the logic? What is logical truth? Somehow, logical truth is that movement through which concepts acquire progressive determination. And I would say their truth is it still is neither the beginning nor really the end as an aim, okay? It's not something like it's said already from the beginning out there. The end of the logic is going to be the truth, the totality of truth, meaning is going to be the all-encompassing system of all the determination of the concept. So what is truth in the logic is this process of the concept acquiring successive determinations. And I was suggesting what is really crucial to Hegel's view of truth there is that dynamic according to which the issue is, how do I make the transition? How do I move from one position to the next? Okay, that's where the whole procedure of refutation has a crucial role. Refutation is showing how a certain position cannot be claimed, certainly has a certain truth, but it becomes false in the moment in which stops the process and declares itself the highest moment of truth. Okay, so the procedure of refutation is what carries me to the successor, to the following position. And so then you're saying, does this model applies to Hegel's philosophy as well? Where, well, I think that that's what the history of philosophy has sort of proved, that the way in which we are reading, I mean, that's why I was suggesting at the end, there is a sort of ethics of refutation that Hegel is sketching out in his idea of, there are true refutations and there are false refutations. So there are refutations that don't lead you to a higher truth, don't lead you to a higher standpoint, and there are refutations that do. So I would say in the history of philosophy, there have been true and false refutations of Hegel. So certainly we move on, but I think what we should discuss is where the true refutation, where the false refutation lies.
Professor Olgin?
Yes, thank you. I wonder if you could say a bit more about in what sense a subsequent concept such as concept is the truth of the previous one. Because the reading that I'm most familiar with is based upon a passage, I think, in the Encyclopedia Logic, where Hegel says that the development of truth is effectively the rendering explicit of what is sort of implicit, the becoming physic of what's fancy. It's a familiar story, but I think it captures what's going on. So, in the move from substance to concept, substance, as it were, putting it simply, contains more than it expresses. Namely, it contains the notion of self-determination. And yet that's only rendered properly explicit as we move to the verb. And I